You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, we're talking with Roberto Cabot. He's in Brazil now. Roberto, thanks for being with me today.
Thanks for the occasion, and thanks for everybody who's listening.
Roberto, let's talk about what you're working on now. I want to talk about your history, but what's happening in your studio? And I'm also interested in what your studio looks like. I mean, we're radio, so I can't show pictures, although there will be images on this. But what does your studio look like, and where are you in Brazil? And also, what are you working on?
Okay, so right now I'm in Rio de Janeiro, in Copacabana, sort of an iconic place. And it's good that you start asking about the studio, because it's also a question I've been thinking a lot in my whole time of producing art, because it's considered the place of production. But I belong to the kind of people that have a very movie biography, so I had to develop another sense of studio. So studios for me are always different places. I'm always moving. I have a basic studio at my home. I have let's say it's about 80 square meters space where I project, where I plan, where I think, and I paint. But then for every project, I like to adapt the space, the place to the project. Not only also the physical quality of the space, but also the symbolic quality of the space. For instance, I did recently a biennial in Taiwan, and they asked me to do a specific work. So I did three big paintings that were about, it was my trial to make a picture of what was going on around me. So I rented a studio in a favela, you know, in a slum just here behind my neighborhood, because it has two great qualities. I had an overview of my city, and I was really in the core of what my society around me is. So these questions, for me, the studio is much more than the place where you go everyday work. You know, it's like it's a place where I'm going to work on a very specific, very special idea, and it has to fit to that too. You know?
And so the studio in the favela, as you were talking about, you still have that studio, or that was just temporary?
No, this was temporary for the specific project. That's what I say. I have this basic, spaceship where I develop the things, and then for every project, I have to find also the specific place that's going to fit to this project. So the studio for me is more than just a place, you know, it's also like part, it's basically part of the materials. So it changes all the time. But just to conclude, I'm sitting here, so in Rio, in my studio, and in my basic studio, as to say, working on my paintings, which are sort of my code writing. Let's say my paintings are sort of the code writing for the rest of the production, you know.
So let's talk about that. The current work, you're creating paintings. Is this for a specific show or towards something? And is this only paintings now, or is there sculpture or music or anything else involved in what you're doing at the moment?
Well, in my process, I started when I was a teenager. My first entrance in contact with art is painting. So I always kept, and then I studied painting in Paris, so I had which is a city which is loaded with painting history, and so I got always have a very almost sentimental relationship to painting, and intellectually painting becomes sort of my, as I was saying, it's sort of my table where I write my code, you know. It's like, so now, for instance, while we're talking, I'm working on a series of painting where I'm thinking about the next step, what's going to be the next big project, what's the next direction. You know, I consider art a sort of a navigation. I feel myself in a ship, a spaceship, in a boat, or something like that. And the painting would be like the way I set the coordinates, you know. So that's what I'm working on right now.
And, I mean, part of working, I guess, is taking notes. And if I have this correct, correct me if I'm wrong, you recently posted a note, I think, just recently, from your studio on your artist page on Facebook, talking about simplification or avoiding simplification, speed, velocity, simultaneity.
I like space-time.
So those are pretty, that's a pretty interesting note. I love notes too, and I like handwriting. So what does this note mean to you? Because on one hand, it seems, you know, it's not about building something in particular. It's about a way of telling a story and a way of working. I mean, especially space-time. I don't understand that, but can you talk about that note a little bit?
Sure. I'm very surprised that, and that's very interesting because I also like talk here about velocity and connectivity on this note, and it's exactly what we're experiencing here. I must say it's funny because I was reflecting about our interview and I was thinking about like putting on paper and also, I mean, in exactly this process right now, as I told you, like to set new coordinates. So, well, tell the story. That's what it starts with. Yes, because I think as I told you, I think making art is a sort of navigation. It's a sort of a logbook in a way. And also, it has a past function, which would be the logbook, but it has a future function, which is this what I was telling about setting coordinates, about coding the actions, and that will come after that. So that's for the tell the story. And then you ask about space time. I think what's written in this note is for me like the main questions that I every morning when I wake up, sort of like I start moving in the world, and I'm confronted with that. The fact that we live in a society, in a culture that comes from a very long effort of simplification. The whole aim of modernity was to reduce things to a very simple formula that would solve a certain question for everybody and the rest of eternity. I think we can't depend on that kind of thing, so we have to find ways to keep complexity, you know, to manage complexity, if I may say. So this is what about this part of the note. And space-time is about the fact that I think that our feeling, I don't think space-time physically has changed. Probably, well, we can say that the scientific conception of space-time has changed. But which is important for me as an artist, even though I inspire myself a lot from science and I have scientist friends, but my function is to tell about perception, to see how I perceive as human being this world. And I think our perception of space-time has changed radically in a very short time. And very quickly, because of just things that I'm telling you. I think about something, I distractedly post it, and then you saw it already, and we're talking on this interview. You're sitting there in Yale, in the United States. I'm here in Brazil, and it's all the same place. I'm not in the States. I'm not in Rio anymore because I'm talking to you. You know? So this sort of perceptions of space-time has changed. I have a series of photography. I like to use photography for this specific question of space-time because I think photography has a lot to do with that. And well, I mixed landscapes. You know, I mixed cities, and I've been doing that for like the last 10 years. And I use pictures from my travels, from my experience, and I create sort of, I try to represent the places where sometimes I find myself, you know, which are not the places where we used to describe earlier. I can't say I'm in Rio, because now actually I'm partly in the States with you, and perhaps in 15 minutes I talk to my gallerist in Germany, so I'll be thrown, you know, to Germany. I'll make a Skype with somebody in Paris, or in, you know. So that's the problem with the cell phone. That's why you shouldn't drive with a cell phone, because you are definitely transported somewhere else. When you're talking on the phone with somebody that's somewhere else, that's not there where you are, you're not there where you are anymore, if you understand what I mean.
I really understand what you mean. And in fact, also when you're talking to someone, you can often sense that, even though you can't see what they're doing. When I have one friend who, yeah, I'm always saying to him, are you looking at the computer now? Because I can tell he's no longer involved in the conversation, you know.
Yeah, because okay, it's the technology. Well, especially imagine with I use a lot Skype, like video conferences. So it's the amount of information you perceive about the situation of this person somewhere else is so huge that it's enough for you to sense even things that are not there. That shows that actually you reach the proximity that defies, in my opinion, all the given conception of what space-time is. I mean, plus, I don't know, there are more and more people, like with this biography we was talking before, like me, that I spent my whole life traveling. My parents traveled, so their parents were people that were traveling, and moving around all the time. I kept doing that my life. And I stopped like a few years ago here in Rio, my birthplace, for the record. But I think this sort of biographies also make that we are people, there are more and more people that have, my life is spread. I have part of my life in Paris, in New York, in Germany, in Brazil, in Argentina. So it's like, also even my personal, my emotional space, time, so to say, is not just here, where my body's standing, so, and this is for me a major question in the way we orientate ourselves in the world, the way we perceive history of our where, how the way we perceive the construction of the future. I think this perception of space time happens very unconsciously, but it has an extreme effect on the way we deal with the world. So that's for me the themes.
Well, that's true, especially as a visual artist. I mean, when I think of, you know, as you're saying that, thinking of like Monet, older artists who, you know, working in a particular part of the world and very directly reflecting that part of the world. It's true, as artists move around, and you're a biennial here, a biennial there, there's all these different artists in the biennials, and they're coming from all over the world, and in most cases they're not reflecting their context even necessarily of that part of the world. It's an independent vision that seems to not be linked often to a geographical area, even though curators try to do that or say, you know, these are coming from the Middle East or somewhere else, mm-hmm. but often there is something beyond that. In your paintings in particular, it seems that there is a direct comment on technology in there and different sort of layers of technology, but at the same time, and maybe this relates to your note, they look to me a little bit like narratives, like stories. They're not entirely abstract, or that's how I see them.
I wouldn't say it's the right way to see, because I think we're always very often very surprised about like what's the right way to see work. And I think even the artist doesn't know really how it's the right way to see his work. But I agree with you. I see it also, for me, it's what it talks to me too. It's that's what I was telling about this narrative that has an element of past, which is sort of a log, but with the same time, and then again we are in this question of space-time, simultaneously it's a log and it's a project, you know, it's a log and it's a projection on the future. So that's what I try to work on these paintings. That's why I think also you have this feeling of this relation to technology, because, well, I think there's no way to not think about the technological question nowadays, because it's probably also like major events in the last many years. And so for me, the paintings, they have to exalt this quality of being this in-betweens. I think I like very much to work in the in-betweens, you know, where in the spaces between events, the spaces between things, you know. So, you see, it's like I'm talking probably more about the space between something like painting, which is a very, very, very old technology, and this, our actual contemporary technology.
Well, I think that also points to the idea of, like you're saying, avoiding simplification, or what you were noted in that note, because it's what you're talking about really is tremendously complex, this idea of how do we integrate all of these things, and at the same time we want to have a home or a safe place. Almost the idea of being everywhere at once doesn't sound safe, no, or comfortable.
It's not comfortable, and the problem is also that we still have to keep navigating the world. You know, we need orientation. We have to know somehow. We have to. That's why I'm talking about the log and the projection. You know, we have to have the log of where we're coming from, and we need also to have the projection of where we want to go. So that comes again to, well, there's a lot, if we're going to go philosophically into that, has to do with the will too, that it goes into another level. But I think this question of avoiding simplification and keeping complexity has also to do with, which is also on the note, a very old obsession of mine, which is the idea that, you know, I grew up as an artist in full in the postmodern fashion. It was in the 80s. And for a young guy like me that was just starting, it was sort of a mixture of a punk and like an intellectual punk, so to say. Postmodern was, I didn't want to, like, use what was done to make something funny out of it. That's how I perceived it at that time, you know. So I had a very big rebellion against modernity. I thought, okay, we have to kill modernity, so in order to free ourselves modernity, in order to be able to do something else. But in the passing time, in the years, I found out that I was having a very modernistic attitude toward modernism, you know, because that's exactly what modernism was praying out to, you know, like, we'll destroy everything, we'll do tabula rasa, and we'll redo the world. So I got some point to the idea that we have to develop an idea of a new modernity, because modernity has very important and necessary issues and very necessary instruments and ideals that we need to keep in order to continue. And then with this attitude, you're not having a modern attitude, because, you know, we go out from this idea of tabula rasa. And so I think I got to the conclusion that we need to construct sort of a new modernity, not a post-modernity, but something that will have some characteristic of modernity, but it's completely different and adapted to what we need. You know?
I like that. I would also think that, you know, in the new modernity, you know, so to speak, or this new way of thinking, of perceiving that you're discussing, and that as well as understanding all of this, or somehow incorporating everything that we've been discussing and all that is contemporary into, you know, thinking and being, there also has to be some type of, and maybe there doesn't, but I've been talking about the idea of artists as shamans lately, the idea of some kind of center that pulls it all together. Do you think, I mean, that's important, or, you know, you don't have to go with it.
I'm almost sorry to agree, because it doesn't make much debate, but I would say, like, for instance, one of the qualities of painting that I need in order to continue working is that when you're drawing a painting, you're very close to your subconscious instincts, you know, you go beyond, you have a very good possibility to go beyond the rational, beyond the projected, you know, the project. You it's something else that has to work there, and I think that's where, actually, we could say that the whole work starts a little bit at this level of shaman, you know. And when I paint, I get into a trance, you know, I'm working. And then I look at the things and I try to find out what I was doing, you know. So that's how the things work. And then I build up projects that relate to technology and things like that. But there's one thing I would like to add about this question of this modernity and this new modernity to come. It would be unfair to talk about that without mentioning Nicolas Bourriaud, you know, who has an incredible, the French critic. You might know Bourriaud.
Sure, of course. The relational aesthetic, who talked about relational aesthetic.
Yeah, and he talks about his concept of ultra-modernism is something. I think he's somebody that's definitely trying to formulate something like that, you know. What could be this idea of a ultra-modernity, another modernity that wouldn't be the other one, but would still have the sort of energy that modernism brought, you know?
Absolutely, yeah, very, very influential thinker. And, you know, it's great talking about all of this, just to kind of put an idea around all this. you're talking about modernity and even the way you talked about shamanism and trance-like states of being a painter. I mean, this is, of course, what artists, you know, can do or can access. But modernity and that idea of, you know, the trance, which seems to me, you know, so to speak, kind of the heart of everything, because now we're somehow connected, or you're somehow connected with everything when in that state. But for most people who aren't artists and who are, let's say, buying art, looking at art, enjoying your art and buying your art, do you think they would have a part of that kind of state? I'm trying to, because it's fascinating talking about this, and it's so complex, all the ideas, and at the same time, we need that kind of safe space or that home to perceive it all in. And as an artist, it sounds like you're saying it's your studio. But what would it be for the viewer or the consumer of art?
You know, I must tell you that in the many years I've been exhibiting and showing things and intervening, and I'm always very amazed of what people see and the reaction. You know, I think that I don't think that the artist does the work. You know, I believe in this very old idea that we're more like sort of channels, you know, and we do things. That's why I like what I tell you about this trance of painting. I think when you get in this state, you're sort of connected to another higher or different, let's say higher is a bad expression, sorry, but a different level of connectivity, you know. And and I think it has to do with this thing that we share, you know, that all these thinking beings share. And so I don't know. I think that's for me the fun also of showing work. You know, I would love to see how people then write about it, how people react about it. And sometimes it's very.
And
funny.
How do you find the reactions? Do you find people in the writing, or, you know, which I've read some of yours of reactions? What do you think of the reactions? Are people tapping into some of what you're discussing?
Well, I mean, I sincerely tell you again, I don't care too much of what people will think about it, but definitely sometimes there are people that, well, like we were talking, you know, that I see that they sort of see similar things that I see, or people that come with a new opening that I hadn't seen myself. I have there's some people that when they write about my work, I like it better or less, you know. I have lots of trouble, I must say, with television and the, like, newspapers, you know, the fast media. Mm-hmm. I think fast media is not very good for art, you know. That's where, if you're talking about feedback, that's where I most of the time get a little frustrated.
Why? Why isn't that good, you know, fodder for art?
I think it's because
art.
Of the speed of the media, you know. It's like, it's very quick, you know, everything comes very fast. And the newspaper, you make the interview, the next day the guy's printing it. And or the television, you know, they suddenly come, make the appointment, they go and film, and they talk a bunch of things for like 2 hours, and they cut it to 10 minutes, and you don't know what happened, and it's all very fast again, you know. So, and it has to be very fast to digest, and it has to be very short, because there's not much space in the pages or much time on the channel. And then again, it's media that forces to a simplification, which I don't think is very healthy, you know, for the apprehension or the perception of art.
I agree. I mean, you know, and now that you say that, and since there is so much kind of reflecting and in this interview, this particular interview will be entirely intact. Our conversation will be kept whole, so I'm not going to cut this to 5 minutes. But I think that's interesting because that is what happens. And, you know, the idea of there's certainly interesting things happening in the movies and TV and otherwhere, but in other places, but it's designed for such fast consumption that often, yeah, we don't get time to really discuss or contemplate is how I'm understanding what you're saying.
Yeah. Imagine. I mean, I think to talk to show like the correlation of everything with everything. It's not. I don't think it's really unlogical that one of the major questions of the digital world is since the beginning it continues being data compression. You know, it's like you have armies of people developing new algorithms and codes for better data compression. So it has to do again with all we were talking. You know, it's like how to manage all this complexity, and what is the idea of data compression? Is that you don't want to waste, you don't want to lose information. So you try to compress it. And what happens when that is translated to media, for instance, that you have this compressed time, this uncompressed content, which is a disaster. One thing is to compress data. Another thing is to compress content, to compress, I think this speed and this pressure makes that this sort of media always needs to close things to make, like, one clear statement, you know. But I don't think art is about that. Art is about opening doubts, you know. It's like opening windows, not about, like, closing spaces. It's like... So that's why, what I tell you, that's probably the situation where I feel the most uncomfortable with the sort of feedback you get.
Yeah, that's interesting because it also seems to naturally lead to, you know, of course, yeah, content compressed becomes meaningless just as, you know, by extension, and I'm not even sure what this means, but a life compressed would seem to be devoid of meaning and romance and, you know, so many things that are enjoyable. In closing, I want... People will have links in this to see other work and a little bit of things we're talking about. Is there anywhere you want to point listeners to who are all in different parts of the world where they might see your work next or anywhere you'd like to
point still, there's still the biennial in Kaunas in Lithuania that's going on. It's an amazing show done by the critic I mentioned before, by Nicola Bourriaud, which is a curator, part of the show I participate. There is my gallery in Cologne, Gallery Brigitte Schenk, which is in the center of Cologne. And there's also things to see on the website. There's a Facebook page. Right now my site is in renewal. It's been taking a while, but I've been liking Facebook as a source. Another question we could do another interview about another day. But anyways, that's basically the source. And I mean, I suggest people that want to see things to Google. You know, that's the best way. And then you get the information all like messy the way it is, but it's also the way I produce it, so it's fine.
So let me just ask you about Facebook as a source. What do you mean by that? And it's true that people Google and they get everything now. As I did when I was searching for you and came upon your note that you wrote, 10 minutes before the interview. with Facebook, what do you mean using it as a source?
There's an artist page. There's an artist page, Roberto Cabot, and because I have a private page with this Cabot, on this page where you saw the note, and there if you browse there, the images and everything, there's a lot of things. So it's becoming a little sort of a little catalog, and which is nice. And it's done by, it's partly done by my assistants, by myself. So it's like there's a little reason why things are there. You know, there's a logic there. And then I would say it's Google. You know, it's like that's the way also I like, or Google or any other sort of search engine. Because another discussion of, I'm not sure Google is the best one right now anymore, but that's another discussion.
Yes. Well, perhaps we'll have another discussion. But until then, Roberto, I want to thank you. I want to thank you so much for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure and very interesting.
I thank you. It was a very, very nice talk to you. Very, very inspiring.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.